children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening, and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Alliance, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages, for all mental health issues, including addiction and school issues. If you know someone that could use Mask for a referral for a therapist, a clinic, an inpatient or outpatient program, a psychiatrist, a school for your child, please feel free to call us at 718-758-0400. And we are open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., and it is strictly confidential. You can call anonymous, describe a situation, and we will try and give you the right referral for whatever the situation may be. Again, I'd like to announce our number. Maybe you want to write it down for yourself, for your loved one, for your neighbor, maybe someone you sit next to in shul. Our number is 718-758-0400. If there is anyone out there that wants to get a free naloxone kit, which is another form of Narcan for prevention of opioid overdose, call us. We will get you trained. It's a short training. It's an inhaler, and everyone should have one available, whether in their home, for your friend, your, you know, child's friend may come over, or maybe you're outside and somebody's overdosing right there on the street, maybe near your shul, the place of prayer. If you need a naloxone free kit, feel free to give us a call, and we could set up that you should get that free kit, even train you in your home. Tonight, I have with us someone that is very popular now. He is the co-author of a new groundbreaking book, and that is Rabbi Dr. Saul Chaimov, who is a licensed clinical psychologist with a specialty in treating people with behavioral and anxiety disorders. He currently serves as the head rabbi of the Brandeis School in Lawrence and the youth director and associate rabbi at the Jewish Center of Atlantic Beach. I'd like to welcome you on today. How are you? Good evening.
Hi, good evening. I'm good, Baruch Hashem. I'm so excited to be joining you tonight on this radio show. And I'm really so give so much a karsa tov to Mask and all the amazing things they do. It's such an amazing resource for the Jewish community, and you have a lot of aslacha.
Amen. Thank you, and to you as well. Tonight, we are focusing not on your rabbi part. We're going to be focusing on the Dr. Chaimov part, but I want to talk about your new handbook of Torah and mental health. And you know, you come from such a rich clinical background. I mean, Child Mind Institute, the NYU Child Study Center, Northwell, Health Cones Children's Hospital, Hofstra University, Center for Anxiety. You want to talk about your clinical background a little so that my listeners know more about you? Because I know they want to get your book once we're done with this show today.
Sure, I'd be happy to, and it's always important whenever you're reading anything online or in a book or listening to something that you're aware of the clinical background of that professional and what their training and expertise is. And I attended a clinical psychology program at Long Island University at the CW Post campus, where I'm trained in both CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, as well as psychodynamic therapy. And I mostly specialized early on in my training with children and teens. I had a specialty working with children with disruptive behavior disorders, so things like ADHD, ODD. I got a lot of school referrals. And as you mentioned, at LIJ, NYU, I really honed in my training on my behavioral and modification skills. That was early on in my clinical training. For my internship at Hofstra University, I worked with college students at their college counseling center, and I really had an amazing training experience working with college students that ran the gamut of just simple anxiety, test anxiety, stress, through depression, eating disorder, substance abuse, and even serious mental illness. So I really developed my skills working with young adults. And then following that up with the postdoctoral fellowship at the Center for Anxiety in Brooklyn, and currently I also have a small private practice in the Five Towns where I will work with children and teenagers as well as adults on a case-by-case basis, where I will treat anything from anxiety to life, identity issues, and depression as well. So really full gamuts, full spectrum from children, teens, and adults, and using both CBT and psychodynamic therapies.
So, Dr. Hymoff, you are the co-author with Dr. David Rosmarine, like you mentioned, from the Center of Anxiety in Brooklyn, who we refer to many times, and is a wonderful clinician. I'm just wondering if you could tell our listeners about the Handbook of Torah Mental Health. What is it about?
Oh, it's a very exciting project, and resources just came out recently, and it's an incredible resource for both Jewish mental health professionals as well as Jewish people in therapy, and especially the community at large. It is the first of its kind to collect. We collected and researched for 2 years over 50 sources from the Torah, and from the Torah I mean all the way back to Tanakh and Chazal, Rishonim, Achronim, Chassidus, Hashkafa, anything that had a direct relationship to a topic of mental health, we categorized and wrote about, and it's there are different chapters in the book on these topics, and we really tried to raise the level of the academic standards when it comes to books in the typical Judaica store that have to do with mental health. Dr. David Rosmarin is one of the leading researchers on spirituality and mental health and has conducted many, many studies in the Jewish population. So every entry that we have in the book has a citation from a study from a scientific journal, and we really connect the ideas in a way that a clinician could find and use in his or her practice, but even the layperson could open up and read more about what the Torah has to say about a specific topic of mental health. And of course, it's just a short, we keep it short and sweet. It's a nice small book, but if anyone is interested in reading more, there are footnotes there. And I have been giving some lectures recently about these topics as well, where I expand on these ideas.
I cannot even imagine what the process of writing a book like that was.
It's a very long, arduous process, and you don't really get to see the payros, the reward until much later. And it was researched, very meticulously. We wanted to find original sources, so I spent a lot of time, tracking down some of these famous sources that people like to quote, and really trying to find the original source in Hebrew, and researching lots of journal studies to come up with support and evidence for these Jewish topics. And really, there's really nothing else like this out there as far as I can tell. There are, Baruch Hashem, lots of books, in the Jewish, right now the Weiss Farm Sale is going on. There's a whole table, a section on self-help. But there's very few that are written by clinicians. And I myself am a rabbi and a clinician, so it really taps into both of these genres of Torah and also mental health from really, experts in the field.
So your book has brief collections on Torah sources on cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, general psychotherapy, and then anxiety, obsessions, compulsions, depression, parenting, and mental health and well-being. Can you just tell my listeners how are Torah and psychology related, please?
So in my opinion, because of my training and background, I really think they're incredibly related. The history of psychology goes way back, and the founding fathers really are of psychology, really had Jewish backgrounds and upbringings, even though they weren't necessarily observant. But many, many famous psychologists were Jewish. And we really, even nowadays, you know, mental health, Jews are really well represented in the mental health fields. And I think that's because both Torah and psychology really emphasize self-growth. They both emphasize self-improvement, becoming the best versions of ourselves. Both Torah and psychology emphasize introspection, looking into yourself, committing to hard work, forming good habits. And really the Torah is in the end of the day, it's a guidebook for living our best lives, a holy spiritual life. And in therapy, people learn how to become the best versions of themselves. They learn about which of their habits are not working for them anymore, what they need to improve on. And many times it requires hard work and dedication and persistence to really improve and live in a healthier way.
And during Sfira, between Pesach and the holiday of Shavuos, there are the 49 days that we count, and it talks about the different behaviors. I'm wondering if you could, connect anything from your book with that, please?
Absolutely. That's one of the most classic or common examples. I just know from my days of yeshiva during Sfiras HaOmer, you'll hear a lot of Musar about, you know, how to grow and taking it one step at a time. In my research, I found that the Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote a piece on this, and Rabbi Akiva Tatz in his book, Living Inspired, has a piece on this. And really, Sfiras HaOmer became the model for self-help. I call it the 49-step program. But there's a lot of research in scientific journals that also supports this method as well. So, for instance, recording your progress and monitoring your progress for whatever goal you're trying to achieve has been found to make you significantly more likely to achieve that goal. So, for instance, in therapy, there's research that shows that therapists who monitor their patients' progress, it could be formally with a giving them a measure or a checklist to fill out each session or some other informal progress, those patients actually do better in therapy overall. They have better outcomes than patients who are in therapy where they don't monitor their progress. So just the simple fact of recording each day could help. It's interesting that in Sfiras HaOmer, there's this idea of having a streak of counting out loud each day, sometimes even doing it publicly. On the APA website, the American Psychological Association, they recommend actually publicizing your progress on whatever you're trying to accomplish and monitoring it, you know, in a written form. And that has been shown to help you stay motivated to accomplish your goal. So I sometimes laugh at people post on social media about their exercise, you know, routine or their diets. And, you know, it seems not so interesting, but actually really is helping the person for sure, because by publicly keeping track of your progress, you are more likely, just from that simple fact, to achieve what you want to accomplish.
So there are so many people that are suffering with, they have different challenges, depression, anxiety, divorces cause so many extra layers of different mental health issues as well. And parenting somebody with substance abuse, whether it's a spouse or your parent, what resources are there on substance abuse, please?
Absolutely. Yeah, and since MASC is an organization that's focused around parenting, parenting plays such an important role. I often try to be very sensitive when I'm working with parents, that I don't want them to feel, you know, chas v'shalom, that I'm blaming them or if I'm, you know, guiding them to change some of their home environment that therefore they caused, you know, any of these issues. But actually I try and frame it from a perspective of empowering them, that you actually have some control. You have something that could possibly help the situation based on your own behaviors. And it's really not about one particular parent, you know, acting a certain way, but really the parenting style and parenting consistency has been found in research to be related to different types of problems, and including substance abuse in teenagers. So just for instance, there's a Torah source about inconsistent parenting styles in talking about Ben Sora Mora, that the Torah says that there's a kol aviv, a kol imo. There's a voice of the mother and the voice of the father. And Chazal and Rav Shimshon Rav Falah Hirsch explained that when the parenting voices are different, when the mother and father have different voices, and it doesn't mean literally their voices, but their parenting style, that that actually could create inconsistency in the home and inconsistency in discipline measures. And research has found that inconsistent parenting styles is one of the best predictors of conduct problems with adolescents. What that means, that more than anything else, a household with two different styles of parents could actually contribute to a problem. So this informs us that as therapists, creating a home environment which a consistent message and a method of disciplining, you know, a child that's out of line could be one of the most effective interventions for this problem.
Dr. Haimov, what parenting advice do you have to share with my listeners?
So like I mentioned before, parents really play such an important role in the environment that the children grow up in their household. As a therapist who meets with the family maybe 1 hour a week, maybe a little bit more sometimes, there's very little that a therapist could do to affect change in the home environment. But really, children react very much to their parenting style. So the first thing I would recommend to parents is to look at their parenting style and see how that plays a role in their children's behaviors. We know that there are different parenting styles. For instance, Diana Baumrind, a leading researcher in the 1900s, developed three different parenting styles, which she called authoritative, authoritarian, and a permissive or lax parenting style. And each one of those has pluses and minuses and is associated with different outcomes in children. So, for instance, the permissive or lax parenting style is one that is known to be, you know, very loving, very giving, very much affectionate as a parent to a child, but very low on the scale of discipline, of setting firm boundaries and limits, and sticking to your guns and to your discipline procedures. So children who grew up with a permissive parenting, with a permissive parenting style, have been found to, on the one hand, have a strong sense of self-confidence, but also report a higher frequency of substance abuse and school misconduct in school as adolescents. So that is connected to the Torah idea of Chesed, Gevur, and Tiferet. And when I work with parents, I will give them an assessment in the beginning, in the first session, to try and help them figure out what their parenting style is. And there really are some very simple and easy-to-learn techniques about not giving in and understanding that it's in the best interest of your child that they should have a regular bedtime and regular routines at night. And being firm actually helps them grow as a person. And I almost function as a coach to check in with their parents about what's going on at home and to make sure that they're being firm and sticking to their guns when it comes to disciplining, because that only helps the child grow in a more healthy way.
You know, in your book, you have a chapter on parenting, and, I mean, there are parents that are being alienated from their children, grandparents. There are parents that go through tragedies, losing a spouse or a child, low alone at a young age. And, you know, hardships, you know, sometimes toughen people. What advice can you give to the parent that is suffering in whatever issues? And you know how they always say, you know, Yiddish mamas, you know, the Jewish mother is always so worried, did the kid eat, the one with the eating disorder, or they get so involved with their child's substance abuse and where they are, what they're doing. So what about those parents? It's very hard to make changes when they're under those big pressures and painful, you know, they find themselves suffering in painful, you know, times and painful environments. So what could you share with those parents, please?
It's unfortunately very common, and even if it's not to that extreme, it's so common when a child is referred to therapy their parent either has a very similar issue or their own issues that they are, you know, struggling with that are in some ways interfering with the treatment or you know, exacerbating the problem in some way. And I think most therapists would recommend at that point for the parent to be involved in some of their own therapy to get better and to work on these issues. Sometimes it's with the actual therapist. I remember, you know, working with a family where the mother was so clearly unable to implement these strategies I was recommending to her because of some underlying issues she had with her own mother that she, you know, reported to me. And I knew that we couldn't go on with the treatment and her helping her daughter until she really came to peace with her own relationship as a daughter to her mother. And I spent a few sessions, you know, talking to her and helping her really process some of the trauma and the abuse that she went through. And only then, you know, it happened relatively quickly, but it was just a good success story of how she was able to heal from her own childhood, not see her child as another, you know, extension of her. That if her child is misbehaving, if her child is disrespectful or rude, she's not going to revert back to her mother's way of disciplining her, and she's going to have the strength to parent effectively, and because she's feeling better mentally, that she's better able to be a parent. A lot of research shows that his own stress and lack of coping skills makes even good parents into ineffective parents. A groundbreaking research study came out that found that amount of time spent alone in childcare was related to ineffective parenting styles, which means that when mothers are home alone for many hours with their children, or it could be a father as well, or single parent, or just for other reasons, parents are going under a lot of stress, even if they know what to do, ideally, they won't do it in the moment because the stress, you know, reduces their coping skills. And in those situations, it's very important for them to develop healthy coping strategies. It could be they need a date night. It could be they need to unwind and to relax a little bit more. And just by doing those things alone, they could become better parents for their children.
And like you said, anxiety, I mean, I want to add that anxiety can cause physical and health problems. So besides, you know, emotionally and mentally, there are people that have underlying issues that it could really create a problem physically then. So that's a very important piece to remember, self-care. Did you want to comment about that, please?
Yes, it's very common. You know, there's a strong genetic component to many of these mental illnesses. And we know specifically with anxiety that a parent could inadvertently reinforce or strengthen a child's anxieties because of their own anxieties. So when a child is, you know, afraid of the dark or being alone or of dogs or socializing, the parents many times give in because they love their child and they don't want to see them suffer. But by doing that, they're actually strengthening the fear and the anxiety and not teaching the child how to overcome. And in therapy, oftentimes, especially in cognitive behavioral therapy, there's a very strong parenting component. You know, parents sometimes think they're going to drop their child off or their teen off and the therapist is just going to fix them and they could, you know, go do an errand, which I totally understand. But many times we want the parents in the therapy room so that they could learn how to better respond and react to their child's issues. So we'll often coach parents that they should not give in if their child doesn't want to go to a birthday party and they're scared that taking them home or being with them the entire time doesn't actually help them. It actually makes it worse in many instances. And the parent has to learn for themselves to let go and to allow their child to face their fears on their own. And it might not go so well at first, but over time, we do expect it to get better. So that's, you know, very important for a parent to be on board with the therapy process as well.
So it's been 22 years. We just completed now in February of PERM. We're starting our 23rd year. Spoke to over 100,000 families that I've reached out to MASC over the years. And Baruch Hashem, there's so many wonderful organizations and self-help books and Rabbanim involved and doctors and therapists that are involved now more than when I started it 22 years ago that I could say, and it's wonderful that being trained, there's Nefesh that trains high-quality trainings for therapists to keep them up to date on everything that's going on, both in the Torah world and mental health, and just mental health world. But just I want to bring up rabbis and mental health professionals. How do you see, you know, it getting better? It's been better, and it's getting better every day. But do you have any ideas you want to share?
Absolutely. I really think that rabbis and mental health professionals play a very important role in the community. And for as an example, you're starting to see it more and more, but I like it to increase, and that is to have more mental health awareness events in schools, in schools, and other Jewish institutions. Even to have a Shabbos dedicated to a mental health awareness Shabbos, and to bring in guest speakers, and to have even Rabbanim speak about it, to make it more mainstream and less of a stigma attached to it, and really to educate the Jewish population. If we treat it like other, you know, physical illnesses that have awareness campaigns, then I think a lot of people who need help will know that they need help and will know where to find help.
Well, thank you, Rabbi Dr. Saul Chaimov. I want to just announce again the Handbook of Torah and Mental Health, authored by Dr. David Rosmarin and Rabbi Dr. Saul Chaimov. I want to thank you for being on our show tonight, and it's always wonderful speaking with you and working with you. Hatzlacha to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope to be on again soon someday.
Thank you. And I want to wish everybody a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight. And our number is 718-758-0400. Thank you, and have a good night.
Ilu ilu hotzianu hotzianu mi mitraim hotzianu mi mitraim daye.
Looking for a magnificent Passover close to home? The New Mountain Laurel Resort in the Poconos has all the activities and amenities for the ultimate Pesach experience. You'll enjoy a gourmet cuisine prepared by Reuven Osherovitz and Besser Foods, fabulous tea room, horseback riding, newly renovated spa, gym, game room, tennis, archery, swimming pool with separate swimming hours, Zumba and casino night. There's top entertainment every night of Chalamot, children and teens programming as well. There's something for everyone and nonstop programming for kids and adults. Rabbis Nachum Shiner and Ari Weber are the scholars in residence. The Mount Laurel Resort is completely kosher for Pesach under the okay and use only Hasidic Shechita and Eschol of Yisrael. Private and communal sederim are available. So what are you waiting for? Call the Mount Laurel Resort at 800-935-1758. That's 800-935-1758.
Did you ever consider being on the radio or hosting your own radio show? Now TalkLine is giving you the opportunity to produce your own daily or weekly radio program. Primetime airtime is available at very affordable and competitive rates. We're looking for independently produced or organizational programs of interest to the Jewish community in the areas of Judaica or Jewish interest, music, news, talk, legal, medical, or financial. Introductory charter rates are also available for advertisers. For more information, contact the TalkLine Broadcasting Corporation at 212-769-1925. Again, that number, 212-769-1925.
Hi, this is Herbert Block, Executive Director of the American Zionist Movement. Today, you and all American Jews can vote for your voice in Israel and around the Jewish world. That's because from now through March 11th, you can cast your ballot online in the U.S. election for the 38th World Zionist Congress. Over 40,000 votes have already been cast. Just what is the World Zionist Congress? It's the global parliament of the Jewish people, and the only institution that democratically represents all of world Jewry. The World Zionist Congress makes critical decisions about the future of Israel and the Jewish people. It decides how to spend $1 billion a year for the World Zionist Organization, the Jewish Agency for Israel, and the Keren Kayemet LeYisrael Jewish National Fund. Those institutions support thousands of programs in Israel and in Jewish communities worldwide. In other words, by voting in this election, you can help shape life in Israel and for the global Jewish community. So visit www.zionistelection.org to vote now for the Jewish future. Thank you.